7BR Part Heard. Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We're joined today by 7BR member Adam Weitzman QC, who's here today to kickstart our pupillage series. Adam specialises in personal injury and clinical negligence claims involving injuries of the maximum severity in fatal cases, historic abuse cases, and actions against local authorities. In 2021, Adam successfully defended Coventry City Council in the first failure to remove claim to be tried following the decision of the Supreme Court in N against Poole Borough Council. Within Chambers, Adam is head of pupillage and is here today to talk to us about life as a silk and pupillage at 7BR. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
So thank you for joining us today and sort of kickstarting the pupillage series, where we'll have various discussions with members of Chambers and our senior clerks about life at 7BR. Before we discuss pupillage, I wanted to get to know a bit more about you, your background, your career at the bar. And I thought the best place to start would be, as always, at the beginning. So what interested you in law? Why did you end up pursuing it? And why did you end up pursuing the bar?
I didn't come from a classic legal background in that I have 2 degrees in social anthropology. The second was an MA in visual anthropology, and I spent a lot of time doing field work in a fishing village called Salango in Ecuador. And as part of my MA dissertation, I made a film, and I got it back after editing it. I realized I'd made the most boring film possible, despite having a really interesting subject matter. And I thought I should go and do something slightly more literal. So I think without much real understanding, I got on the, used to be called the CPE, I think it's now called the Law Conversion Course at City of London Polytechnic. And again, I wasn't particularly enthralled, but I started working for the Free Representation Unit. And the first case I did, and this takes you back, it was a supplementary benefit for a man who wanted an extra allowance because he was incontinent as a result of his alcoholism. I think we were arguing about something like £10 a week, although this was quite some time ago, so it's worth a bit more than it is now. But the moment I started acting as an advocate on behalf of someone, I was absolutely enthralled and hooked. And I went on to do lots and lots of free cases, Social Security, and a lot of, it was then the Criminal Risk Compensation Board. And that ever increased my interest in being an advocate, which made the bar a natural choice. But it wasn't, I think, a particularly conventional legal route.
No, it's always nice to hear that not everybody from birth or the age of 5 has always wanted to pursue law. And actually, at 7BR, we have members that have had previous backgrounds in various histories that are non-conventional, as you say. Now, looking at your time as a junior tenant, I understand that you initially had a practice that was mixed, so both criminal and both civil. At that time, did you know that you wanted to specialise, or were you simply trying out various areas to see which best suited your skills and interests?
I didn't have any real idea of what particular area I wanted to practice in. I think, as with many in Chambers, I had an interest in representing people and sorting out their problems, but a common law practice, whether it's crime, personal injury, I think all of those areas of law involve that basic approach. So when I started out in 1993, I was a pupil in Chambers when we were in the Temple. I began to do a mixture of crime, civil, and family. I didn't do family for very much longer, but I went on doing a mixture of crime and civil, which was predominantly personal injury, clinical negligence, until 2009. So I had a mixed practice for nearly the first 2 decades of my time at the bar. In the end, unfortunately, it wasn't possible to go on combining the two. I think the straw that broke the camel's back was when I was due to prosecute a MTEC fraud, which is a carousel fraud involving VAT dishonesty in Birmingham. And it was listed for 6 months, and my personal injury practice was really taking off. And I knew that if I absented myself from 6 months, I might not be able to keep the PI and Clinleg going at the present level. So I had to make a choice, but I still slightly regret that I'm not a mixed practitioner, not least because doing crime, you're in court more than you are doing civil. And so then after that, I developed my clinical negligence, my personal injury, and I started doing lots of work for local authorities and other institutional defendants in relation to historical abuse and removing children from parents and whether a failure to do so was negligent. And so I would describe my practice as a third practice. I do a third personal injury claimant work, a third clinical negligence, again, it's claimant work, and then one third defendant work for local authorities and institutions. And interestingly, the defendant aspect throws up a lot of very interesting legal questions. And I was very lucky to be involved in a number of cases which were quite high profile and went to the appellate courts. And on the basis of doing that work, I applied successfully for SILC, and I was made SILC in 2016. And really, I continue to do a similar mix, the difference being that the injuries that my claimants suffer, whether through personal injury or clinical negligence, tend to be much more severe. And similarly, the kind of cases involving local authorities tend to be the ones with important points of law or a high level of damages. So, for example, in your introduction, you mentioned DFX versus Coventry. And although damages were agreed at a much lesser amount by the time we reached trial, the original schedule was pleaded at 40 million. And it was an important point of law because the Supreme Court in Poole ruled that it was possible that a local authority did owe a duty of care to children in the community, but precisely whether or not such a duty would arise had to be considered on the facts. And this was the first trial with 10 days, I think, in front of Mrs. Justice Lambert where that was considered and dealt with. But going back to where I started, if I think about the cases I'm doing, whether for the claimant or for the defendant, they always involve that human element, that human interest. So that golden thread, as I see it, of what we do at 7BR, I've had luckily throughout my practice, and I still feel it's a huge privilege to be able to come along and use my legal expertise and my talents as a barrister and my advocacy skills to sort out people's problems for them. And that's, I think, what gives me the greatest amount of satisfaction, and similarly other members of these chambers. Because as a mixed common law set, you are always dealing with people and trying to resolve the problems that they face in everyday situations gone badly wrong.
So just following on from that thread that you have just sort of explained to us of this very high profile, very important piece of law, your DFX case in Coventry, and then pairing that with what you said of your skills as an advocate, these are the types of things that are resemblance of SILCs or QCs. Now, for our listeners who don't know what that means, could you just explain what being a QC or a SILC is?
Being a QC is meant to be a kite mark of excellence. So it's something you have to apply for, and you fill in a detailed application form which requires you to cite some important cases that you've been in, and you need references from judges who you've appeared in front of, from opponents and instructing solicitors. And if your form shows a suitable level of experience and expertise, you then have to go for an interview round. And really, the purpose is to identify barristers who can deal with the most difficult and sensitive cases legally, from a public profile and from a money point of view. And the idea is that you will be technically good, capable of leading a team quite often, because the case will require barristers and solicitors to work together, capable of excelling in court, cross-examination, submissions, and finally, that you have a clear understanding of your duties and the ethical boundaries. So really, it's a kite mark to show that you can do the most testing and difficult cases in your particular area of law.
And since taking Silk, is that something that you found that you are now being pushed and challenged in ways that you weren't necessarily as a senior junior?
Undoubtedly, the difficulties that you face and the choices that you have to make are weightier. So if I could give you an example, soon after I took Silk, I had what's called a joint settlement meeting in a case for a child who was very badly injured, where the other side offered me $2.5 million, which the family very much wanted to accept. If you are representing a child, you have to be able to say to the judge that it's the right amount. I said, no, that's simply not enough. The defendant was denying liability, and so we had to go to a liability trial, where we succeeded. And we are now looking at, well, something north of 10 million in damages, possibly 20. But I undoubtedly had quite a lot of sleepless nights turning down the 2.5 million as a new Silk in the run up to a liability trial. And I suppose what I'm trying to say is the decisions that you have to make have more impact on your client, and so are more worrying. And similarly, if you go into court for someone who is tetraplegic or very severely brain damaged, the stakes are higher. You're doing the same thing. You're just meant to be doing it at a higher level. And of course, your opponents, because more's involved or it's more difficult, they're acting at a higher level as well. You only hope that you can live up to the kite mark.
So if we then flip the roles here, you have spoken about how you have to make these very hard decisions. You have these sleepless nights. This is undoubtedly in part due to the level of training, the level of support that is available at 7BR that you got from the beginning of your time as you started out in your career. So now, putting your hat on as the head of pupillage, what training does 7BR provide that allows your tenants to reach the kite mark of excellence that you're talking about at Silk?
Well, I would hope that our pupils would feel that the year they spend with us, first of all, exposes them to the kind of work I've been describing. And secondly, through their pupil supervisors, identifies the way in which one can approach that, both deploying legal knowledge, advocacy skills, but also empathy. And certainly if I think about those who we have as pupil supervisors, they all are highly skilled advocates with a huge dose of common sense. And I think they provide quite a lot is expected of our pupils, but also quite a lot of support to them. And so there really is an opportunity for our pupils to develop the skills necessary to do the kind of work I'm talking about. And of course, that will be in a criminal court, in a family court, or in a civil court. And we place a huge emphasis on ensuring that those who do pupillage with us see and experience all those types of work. And that's because we believe that it's important to have at least when you start out, broad experience. So nothing is going to equip you so well for life as an advocate starting out as trials in the Crown Court. It may not be, as I haven't, that you go on to be a criminal barrister, but cross-examining defendants, cross-examining policemen is a really important learning curve. Similarly, we do a lot of inquest work, and having to cross-examine doctors who are in effect experts blind without your own expert, again, it's a wonderful learning curve. And it's that kind of work that our pupils are exposed to, and it's that kind of work that they will do as junior chairs, although as they progress, most, although not all, will decide to specialise after a number of years of practice.
Just two final questions. You've highlighted various skills, advocacy, empathy, that are important as a barrister. Other than those, what do you look for in your pupils or your prospective pupils?
What we hope to identify is people who are committed to the kind of work that I've described, who are interested in the problems that people will experience and solving them. People who are interested in doing, at least to begin with, a multidisciplinary practice. And I think to do that, both to manage the multidisciplinary aspect and to sort out people's problems, you obviously need a certain intellectual ability and confidence, but you need a big, healthy dollop of common sense. Common sense and determination on top of the usual academic excellence, etc., that all sets of chambers are going to be looking for from people.
Of course.
If you have a very academic take on the law, I'm not sure where the place for you.
And just finally, is there anything that you think stands out in applications or things that potentially put off applicants getting through the paper round that you could highlight so that our future pupils could avoid or seek to enhance their applications with?
Yeah, it's very hard, and my heart sinks for those who have to fill out pupil application forms. I mean, I had to do the silk form, as I say, about 5 years ago. I think it took me 2 months to write that, so I have huge sympathy. I suppose what I'd say is, rather than simply declaiming your excellence or ability, try and give us practical examples. It's much easier to get a measure of someone if you've got a practical example. And to be frank, if you're reading a large number of different applications, it will stand up more than a number of superlative adjectives which many people may use. And I think the practical examples based on people's life experience gives us an idea of who we're dealing with. It brings, puts a bit of colour on the painting.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today, Adam. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you to our listeners. If you enjoyed this week's episode and the start of our pupillage series, please join us next week where we'll be hearing from Susanna Johnson, a senior junior here at 7BR, who's going to discuss her career and life at the bar. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.